Support for the Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, working to support students, educators, and public schools as the center of their communities through the Public Schools Unite Us initiative, and United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org. It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm David Giustina. Joining us this week is John King, the 15th Chancellor of the State University of New York, the largest comprehensive system of public higher education in the United States, with 64 colleges and universities. Prior to his appointment as chancellor, King served as president of the Education Trust, a national civil rights nonprofit which seeks to identify and close opportunity and achievement gaps for students from preschool through college. Chancellor King also served in President Barack Obama's cabinet as the 10th U.S. Secretary of Education. Before his appointment as Secretary of Education, Chancellor King fulfilled the duties of Deputy Secretary of Education. And before his service in Washington, D.C., Chancellor King was New York State's first African-American and first Puerto Rican Education Commissioner. Welcome back to the Capital Connection, Chancellor John King.
Thanks so much. It's great to be back.
It's so good to talk to you today. We're talking via the modern technology known as Zoom, something the university is fully using. And why don't I just start there, because we are using this technology. How much has that impacted? And I know a lot of that is a result of the pandemic. Public higher education.
You know, it's had a significant impact in that we have many more students who are taking classes online. Of course, we have SUNY Empire, which is fully online and particularly focuses on folks who need to complete their degree, maybe started somewhere else and are finishing up. But across the SUNY system, all of our campuses are offering some classes online or hybrid. So it's really made it possible for students to access academic opportunities that might not otherwise have been available to them. So in that sense, it's added. I will say, I think more broadly in our society, the shift to so much time online has also had its negative consequences around mental health and so forth. So we've got to be balanced about these things.
Well, from there, let's talk about an issue that's made the news. I've heard a number of reports on it now, and I know you have some things to say about it. This is FAFSA, the acronym, the Free Application for Federal Student Aid, is a form available every year that determines your eligibility for college-related financial assistance. The education secretary is now promising changes after a botched financial aid overhaul. Dense college enrollments, that's one of the headlines. This is months of glitches and delays that have roiled the college application process for millions of students this year. Let's get your thoughts on that, SUNY Chancellor John King.
Sure. Look, the intentions, I think, were good on the part of the U.S. Education Department. They were trying to make the FAFSA form shorter and simpler. This is the form that gives you access to federal financial aid, state financial aid, institutional aid from your college. So very important role in the financial aid process. They were trying to make it shorter, simpler, easier for families. They had some very significant technical challenges. It delayed the release of the FAFSA about 3 months. Lots of glitches, as you said. The result is that as a country, we're down about 10%. In FAFSA completion compared to this same time last year. And the fear is that will mean students don't make the choice to go to college because they don't realize the aid that is available to them. You know, at SUNY, 52% of our students go tuition free because of federal and state financial aid. It's very important that students complete that form. So we've been doing a lot of work at SUNY to try to make up for these federal challenges. Information sessions. We have a FAFSA completion core where we train current students to help prospective students and their families complete the FAFSA. On our website, suny.edu, a ton of information about the FAFSA and what you need to complete it. And we're going to keep those information sessions going even into the academic year because we really want every student to get all the aid they're entitled to.
And you can go and find out more about this at your website, right? suny.edu.
Exactly, exactly. And if folks want to sign up for one of our information sessions, some of them are in person, some of them are online, but we really want to make sure that folks get the help they need to complete the form. One of the good things is the form is available throughout the academic year, but it's really helpful to students and families to know what college is going to cost before the academic year gets going. So this is the moment for folks to take care of that.
Well, along the lines of financial aid and making sure everybody has an opportunity to go to college, we saw what happened with the decision by the Supreme Court on affirmative action. How is that impacting the State University of New York, and where are you in all of this?
You know, the Supreme Court's decision on race-conscious admissions was very disappointing. It's really important to the country that we have diversity in our leadership. I believe diversity on our campuses makes our campuses stronger, makes classrooms discussions richer, makes the quality of our research more nuanced, makes our faculty stronger. So we certainly at SUNY are committed to advancing diversity and have taken steps to make sure that we're using all the available legal tools to maintain that commitment to diversity. So in our admissions process, we're looking at, are students from low-income backgrounds? Are they first in their family to go to college? Are they veterans? Have they participated in the AmeriCorps program, doing public service? Have they overcome adversity in their school or community? All of those are race neutral, but an opportunity to make sure that we have a diverse class. Supreme Court also said that schools could look at what students themselves say about their own life experience and how race may have impacted their life experience in their essay. So we certainly can consider that. This is mostly relevant for our four university centers, Binghamton, Stony Brook, University at Buffalo, and University at Albany. Those are where we have our most selective programs, particularly at the graduate level, as well as our medical schools. But we're working hard to make sure we have a diverse class. We don't have the data yet for this new academic year, but I'm hopeful that our emphasis on these race-neutral criteria that will help us build a diverse class across many dimensions will help prevent against the potential devastating impact of the Supreme Court decision on diversity.
Yeah, and one of the solutions, at least partial solutions, to much of the issue with affording higher education has been from the Biden administration to try to relieve financial aid, to try to take away the debt, the burden that is on so many young people in their families who are trying to afford a college education. And, you know, obviously public higher education is a much more affordable opportunity for those that have the least. But, you know, how much of this should be everyone's right to have a full education? You know, we get the primary grades taken care of up through high school, but should everyone be able to be educated no matter how much money they have to the highest level they want to achieve?
Absolutely. Look, you know, today's economy, it is very difficult to find a good job with just a high school diploma. You need some sort of post-secondary training. Now, that might be a career and technical education certificate. That might be an associate's degree or a bachelor's, but you need something beyond high school really to be competitive in this economy. And we deliver all of that at SUNY. We've got the full range from micro-credentials to certificates to our community colleges, to our four-year degrees, to graduate programs. Tuition at our four-year institutions, $7,070 for the year. So we really have in New York maintained a high level of affordability. But, you know, when I think about what the Biden administration is trying to accomplish, you have to really look at what happened over the last 40 years. You know, in 1980, the Pell Grant program, the federal financial aid program, a grant, not a loan, a grant, the Pell Grant program covered 80% of the costs of public higher ed. Today, it's less than 28%. And so what happened is, as a country over a 40-year period, we shifted from seeing higher education as a public good that we all benefit from to saying students and families have to borrow to pay for their education. And that was a policy mistake that the Biden administration is now trying to correct with the debt forgiveness. But the challenge is we'll end up right back in the same place if we don't change the Pell Grant program. We really need to double the Pell Grant so that the buying power is more similar to 1980. So I'm hopeful that there's a realization, a bipartisan realization of the importance of investing in higher education. But certainly in New York, we are fortunate to have a governor and a legislature who are deeply committed to keeping SUNY affordable and also to expanding our financial aid system in the state. Last year, the governor and legislature expanded the state tuition assistance program to cover more families and doubled the minimum award. So those were important steps here.
How are we doing on enrollment? You know, we've seen some local private colleges in our area, in the capital region, for instance, like St. Rose, close. And part of that was some financial burden and management. But the issue is that enrollment took a bit of a hit, I'm guessing, from the pandemic. How have we recovered? Are we doing well? And then there's the issue of reopening campuses I see on my list here.
Yeah, so the good news is last fall of 23, we had our first increase in enrollment at SUNY in a decade. And enrollment was up in every sector. Community colleges, our tech colleges, our four-year institutions, all up. We're a little worried about the impact of the FAFSA on this year's enrollment, but we're cautiously optimistic that we're going to be able to maintain the momentum and see some increases this academic year as well. We're working hard to make sure that the students have that financial aid that they need so that they can enroll and succeed in college.
Well, and the new thing is technology and artificial intelligence. The State University, of course, is committed to being in a leadership role here, I see. But you know, this is a brave new world in so many ways, and we have to be careful, don't we? Because information and the verification of information and making sure our students have the best quality information they can have. I know this specifically in the broadcast journalism arena, being an adjunct professor at the University at Albany, that this is a very important area. Now, obviously, we want to be out ahead, right?
Absolutely. And look, the key thing we think is that we have to leverage artificial intelligence for the public good. There are plenty of companies out there, the Metas and Googles, that are trying to figure out how to use artificial intelligence to make a profit. But at SUNY, our interest is how do we use artificial intelligence to detect disease earlier, to improve the treatment of disease? How do we use artificial intelligence to provide new educational opportunities to better address the needs of students with disabilities? How do we use artificial intelligence to better predict extreme weather events? This is an area where UAlbany has a real leadership role, you know, to predict extreme weather events so that we can prevent some of the damage due to those events, like the damage from flooding. So we're interested in AI advancing the state's interests and the interests of the community in better health outcomes, better life outcomes. And so the governor, Governor Hochul, has really invested in that vision. Last year in the budget with the legislature, she created an initiative called Empire AI, which will establish one of the nation's and world's leading supercomputer sites at the University at Buffalo, allowing researchers from UB, from UAlbany, from Binghamton, from Stony Brook, from CUNY, as well as some of the private colleges, Cornell, RPI, Columbia, and NYU, to use that supercomputer to pursue research that advances the public good. So we're really excited about that project. It's getting launched now. We also are doing really important work at University of Buffalo to protect against some of the dangers of AI. They have a center, for example, looking at deep fakes, which we really worry about because that could really disrupt our elections.
Absolutely. We're already seeing some of it appearing. And although most of it you can sort of tell, we are really in an area where it's going to be necessary for even journalistic organizations to employ someone who's an expert at recognizing these things.
That's exactly right.
Well, let's talk about a major election, a presidential election coming up in November. And it's not only obviously the presidential election, but we're looking at congressional seats. And the students have an opportunity because of the law that was passed in New York, where campuses will have polling sites. Now, that's obviously dependent on the campuses and getting that set up and, of course, creating awareness among the student body. And I am worried, for example, with my first class this week, and these are journalists or budding journalists, of course, when I asked them where their primary news source was, they said TikTok. So you know, we better have the election information for students and campuses on TikTok. But it's important, right? Young people have an opportunity to make an impact. And now, if we bring it closer to them, there's more likelihood they'll vote.
Absolutely. Look, I started out as a high school social studies and civics teacher, so I'm very passionate about making sure in a nonpartisan way that our students participate in civic life and vote. And so we have 39 of our campuses that are part of a national effort called the All In Campus Challenge, where their presidents have committed to work with their teams to make sure our students know about how to register to vote, do register, and participate. We also, across the SUNY system, as part of our housing process, are providing students with information when they get their housing about how to register locally if they want to do that rather than register at home. A number of our campuses will host polling sites. We're still doing the work with local election officials to figure out which ones. We are fostering a climate, we hope, on our campuses of civic dialogue, civic discourse. We have a set of fellows, faculty members from across the system, who we named as Civic Education Fellows. They are providing professional development, putting together convenings, so that faculty are thinking about how do we help students become civically aware. And we're changing our general education requirements to say that across the curriculum, civic discourse has to be a learning outcome for all of our students. To me, it's core to the mission of public higher education to prepare the next generation of citizens.
Yeah, you know, part of my course this semester will be doing a story about how to make sure you're registered, how to vote on campus. And we'll talk to the folks here about how that's going and where that polling site will be and how to access it. And we'll get that story out to the campus community. My first question, of course, that comes from the students is, who do we talk to? Where do we go? Do you have any sense of on campus where you go for this question?
You know, certainly the student affairs offices on our campuses are prepared to help students in this way. We also are launching an initiative this fall together with Lieutenant Governor Delgado called the Empire State Service Corps, where 500 SUNY students will have the opportunity to do paid public service work, 300 hours of public service work this year. Some of them will tutor in schools. Some of them will work on environmental projects. Some of them, 15 of them, will actually work for nonpartisan organizations that are working to increase civic participation and voter participation. And so we hope those students will also be a part of the solution here. And our student government across the SUNY system is also committed to helping students learn how to vote, where to vote, and also where to access good information about elections.
We're speaking with SUNY Chancellor John King, and you are listening to The Capital Connection. I'm David Gustina. You know, let's talk about free speech and this surrounding the issue of the Israeli and Hamas war and the Palestinians in between. And we obviously understand the magnitude of this and the attack on Israel that began this issue. But on campuses, this has erupted. And how do we ensure that free speech continues? Obviously, people are safe and no one gets hurt, but that people on either side or in the middle get a chance to speak their minds.
Look, you said it exactly right. Our first priority has to be safety of our students, of our staff, of our faculty. And as public higher institutions, we need to be places of healthy civil discourse. And so we see that as our charge, just to satisfy both of those objectives. There are a few things that we worked on over this summer to prepare for the school year. One is we want to make sure that all of our students understand our content neutral time, place, and manner restrictions. That is to say, understand what the rules of the road are for where you protest, how you protest, what time you protest. You can't block someone's way to get into their classroom. You can't yell through a megaphone next to somebody's dorm room in the middle of the night, right? So we have to have those rules, and those rules have to be content neutral, meaning it can't be that you have some rules when you like the protest and other rules, when you dislike the protest, those have to be rules that are consistent across all types of protests. So we're making sure students understand those rules of the road through our orientation. We have to make sure that students know where to go when they experience harassment or discrimination. And we have to make sure that every one of those incidents is thoroughly investigated and resolved. There's a civil rights law that applies here, Title VI of the Civil Rights Act. We have to make sure that students are protected from harassment and discrimination. And we have to send a clear message that we will not tolerate on our campuses anti-Semitism, Islamophobia, or other types of hate. All of that said, we've also got to build the habits of civil discourse. How do you disagree agreeably? How do you, in a conversation, not only question the assumptions of the person you're arguing with, but question your own assumptions? And that goes back to why we're doing this work on civic education, which ultimately is core to our mission.
Well, and hands-on experience, too, is another thing that I know you're promoting. You want to have that direct connection. You know, really, a lot of students oftentimes are afraid. How am I going to make the transition from what I'm learning, my knowledge, to the quote-unquote real world, that real-world job? And a lot of that is made easier by internships and other connections that we can make to those disciplines and fields, you know, while being cognizant that there has to be some higher learning as well, taking some of the theory, obviously, but also the practice, marrying the two.
So one of our goals at SUNY is we want every undergraduate to have an internship experience. And since I came to SUNY in January of 23, we've been working towards that goal. We've secured now $14.5 million in recurring funding from the state that is supporting paid internships across the SUNY system, because we don't want internships just to be available to the affluent student who can afford to work for free. We need to make sure that all of our students can have those internship experiences. We've launched a Climate Corps internship program where we're partnering with the Department of Environmental Conservation, Parks Department, NYSERDA, others to place students. We have a summer research internship program that we've launched, including this past summer. We had a particular focus for a number of those slots on artificial intelligence. So we had students right here at UAlbany doing fascinating work on artificial intelligence for their summer. We've launched an internship program focused on veterans, so that our veteran students are interning in their campus admissions or recruitment office, helping bring more veterans to SUNY and helping veterans navigate once they get to campus, accessing the supports for veterans. So we're going to keep working to grow those internship opportunities, because you're exactly right. Part of what students want out of the higher ed experience is the chance to apply their learning, to get that hands-on experience they can put on their resume so that when they apply for that job, they can say, oh yeah, I know some of what this job will entail because I had this experience while I was in college.
What about the idea that a public higher education institution is often labeled liberal? The idea that you're getting a liberal education and that, you know, people don't want to see, you know, higher education politicized. And at the same time, when we look at the criticism often from the right about people who are elitist because they have, quote, too much education, how do we bridge these gaps in our society that impact us in so many ways and continue dividing us when they really shouldn't? Because we could probably all agree that not everybody wants a quote-unquote higher education in that traditional sense, but we should be trying to meet everyone where they are and craft the best education for them. And that really shouldn't divide anybody, should it?
That's right. And look, when we use the term liberal arts, what we mean by that is something truly, truly nonpartisan. It's this idea that we want students to be exposed to the world. We want students
open-minded.
Know about other cultures, know about the arts and music, have a sense of the scientific method, right? To have a vision of their world and their community that is broader. And that's good for everybody. Part of that is the ability to have empathy, to try to understand people's experiences that might be different from your own. And that's one of the reasons I'm so excited about the Empire State Service Corps, because I think when you're tutoring alongside someone, when you're building a house for low-income folks alongside folks who are different from you, it's one of the reasons I'm passionate about internships, because that puts you in situations with people whose life experience is different from yours. And those kinds of experiences help cultivate a sense of understanding. And that is so crucial in our society right now. People are so quick to put themselves in camps and use labels and then try to distance themselves from people who are other. And we've got to combat that. And one of the beautiful things about SUNY, our diversity of income, our diversity of geography, our diversity of race, our diversity of politics, we celebrate that. We want students to be prepared to live in a diverse community.
Having taught there for 22 years, I couldn't agree more. And that's the University at Albany. And it's that that I think, and I would think you probably feel this way being in higher education, when I go up to that campus, it gives me hope, because these young people don't have the same kinds of divisions us old folks back in my and everyone else's past seem to have. And boy, that's a good thing, because that just brings us closer together as human beings.
It's beautiful. That's one of the reasons I love the start of the school year. You know, I was at UAlbany for new student orientation last week. It's beautiful. You see the energy, the passion, the enthusiasm, the openness, the excitement about learning. It, you know, renews your spirit. And so I love the start of the school year. I'm so excited about your class. I'm glad that's off to a good start. And, you know, we're looking forward to a really good year at SUNY.
He is the SUNY Chancellor, John King, and I can't tell you how much I appreciate you giving us the time to talk about higher education, and that's state public higher education, which is so important for so many, including those who have the least. Thank you again for being here.
Thanks so much for the opportunity.
The Capital Connection is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. You can listen to The Capital Connection anytime at wamcpodcast.org or anywhere you get your podcast. And join us again next week at this same time for another political conversation. For The Capital Connection, I'm David Giustina.
Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, working to support students, educators, and public schools as the center of their communities through the Public Schools Unite Us initiative.